Accession number 10648, Reel 2.
Mr. George Peak, Reel 2. You were telling me about how when people were asked to volunteer for Imperial service, quite a proportion didn't. Have you any idea what proportion out of
about, I should think about 5/8, just over half volunteered.
So around 40, just over half. So about 40% didn't.
About 40% didn't, yeah. Yes, about 50% volunteered, the others didn't.
How did you feel about the people who didn't volunteer? Did you understand?
I never thought about them at all. Never gave them a thought. Didn't bother.
There was no bad feeling then? There was no bad feeling about it?
No, nothing at all, no. Oh, no. The only bad feeling I had was with the Red Caps. Because I wanted to get home, you know, for a last look at them, you see. So I got no leave. So the shoemaker, official shoemaker of the battalion, he said to me, I'm going home tonight, I'm going to try another way. Are you coming? So I said, yes. So of course I went with him. And he said, when you come to a tram car, get underneath the lady's skirt, long skirts then, you know. Get underneath there, you'll be quite safe there. So that's what we did. I hid underneath the lady's skirts while... You know, they were like that, you know, we were underneath here. When the Red Caps came on to inspect the car, they saw nobody in there, so they passed it over. And I had my belt and bayonet right down my trousers, you know. And, because that was the belt and bayonet with the dress of the day, you see.
Didn't the ladies object?
Oh, no, they was all for us. Come on, underneath here. They helped us. Oh, they did. They were all for it. They were all absolutely for it.
So you got home, did you? You got home, did you?
Oh, yes, I got home. But I had to be about 4:15 the next morning to catch a train that was coming from Manchester to Farnworth. And we got round, the station's not there now. And the station, we got to this place. Got it. It stopped there, it saw us. It shouldn't have stopped there, but it did do. It stopped there, about a dozen of us stopped there. We all jumped on. And we got to Turton, you know.
Turton Camp. Where the camp was.
And there was a stream run down there, an ablution, where they used to wash themselves, you know. And I had a towel and soap with me. And just fell in when they fell in. They didn't see me behind the bushes. Fell in with them and I was all right. Could have a wash and went back as if I'd never been out. And he did the same, you know.
So you weren't caught?
And then we... about the last night, almost the last night, my father came to say ta-da to me, you know. And he gave me about a dozen packets of Woodbines, you know, to smoke, and I didn't smoke. I never smoked. But he thought I didn't smoke, you know. He thought I did smoke. But I really didn't. He gave me, and I was able to sell them, and I'll give them away. Well, I did smoke eventually.
So was the day before you left Turton, was it?
That's right, yeah.
Had you done much training at Turton before you left?
We had no training before I left, no.
So you were just living in the camp at Turton?
Just living in the tent, yeah. And then...
How did you spend the day then? What were you actually doing during
the day? Oh, just messing about, you know. Going to the canteen and reading and all that. Just messing about until the time came when we were told we were going, and Then we've got to get everything ready, kit bags and everything ready to be off. And I think we left Manchester, I don't know what time it was. Well, left Salford anyway.
And that was on the, according to this transcript of your diary, that was on the 9th of September.
It would be somewhere about that.
And you left for Southampton.
And we went to Southampton.
Did you get any kind of a send-off anywhere from
civilians? No, it was midnight. I think it was night, midnight, and when we left Southampton. When I woke up next morning, they were all singing, what was it? I forget now what they were singing. I think it was about singing Ringo, Ringo, bring back my stirrups to me. You've been in the saddle 5 hours, I've took it as long as I could. And now I can stick it no longer. My heart is not made of wood. So bring my, the skin of my bum to me, you know. And they were all singing that, and another lot was playing Elsie, Elsie. That's bingo, isn't it? So, and I had a good look round then. There was no land in sight then. And I never saw land again until I came to Gibraltar. And I saw Gibraltar. And it looked just marvellous. You could just see, you could see the top of the rock, but you couldn't see any lower than the top. It was veiled in the cloud there. We stopped there about an hour, then we were off again.
This is on the SS Neuralia.
On the Neuralia, yeah.
What was it like? What were conditions like on board ship?
Oh,
where were you sleeping? What was
we were all in hammocks. With a climb onto an hammock.
How did you get on with a hammock?
Oh, champion! I got thoroughly interested. You know, I intended making a good do of it.
What about seasickness? Was that a problem? Seasickness, was that a problem?
No, I was never seasick at all. I wasn't seasick a bit.
What about the rest of the troops?
We got to the Bay of Biscay, and I think there was an accident there. I heard one of the engineers, not on our ship, on one of the other ships, had fell down and broken his leg or something. Something like that. I remember that. And then I remember seeing a lot of ships in the HMS Minerva. That came along with us. That was with us. HMS Minerva. And I think there was an Austrian boat or some boat or other, a gunboat of some sort, came along, and it saw our lot, and it pulled steam on away, and the Oceania, I think it was the Oceania, chased it, you know. So, and then of course we arrived in Egypt. And what surprised me in Egypt was the size of the Arabs carrying big cases on the backs. Really big, heavy cases on the backs. And the cheapness of the watermelons and oranges. At best, we only got, a shilling a day, you know, that was our pay then, a shilling a day. And I only got sixpence a day because the other sixpence went to my mother. So I hadn't much to spend. But I had a few piastres. I forget now how much a piastre was worth in English money. But I seemed to have quite enough until the Australians came.
We'll come to that later. So you arrived at Alexandria around about the 25th of September, and you didn't stay in Alexandria, did you? You didn't stay in Alexandria, did you?
Oh, no.
You went to...
Went straight to Abyssinia Barracks.
And that's at Cairo?
That's in Cairo, yeah.
What were the barracks like?
Oh, they were... the first time I'd seen them. You had three biscuits. You know, biscuits. Like you said, on a biscuit. Like these. You had three of those. And the pillow. I don't know what the pillow was made of. It was pretty hard. That's all. And in the morning, you've got to get up and put your three biscuits together. Sweep up round you where it had been, and that was it.
So what would a day... What would a day's routine be in Abyssinia Barracks?
Mostly guard duty at first, and then when manoeuvres came on, you were we're going on drills, not form fours and that, but proper manoeuvres, leading eventually when the Australians came over, we were having manoeuvres with them, them against us. And that was, of course, that was really for the commanders and for, although for us as well, see how long we could stick it. You know, it was hard work on the sandy desert, your tongue hanging out for water, and right about 20 miles in a day or more. That was the hard part about it. But, of course, none of us dropped out.
Did it make you fit? Did it make you fitter?
Oh, yes, I think so. I think I got as hard as nails. Get hard, get very hardened up to it. So that when we went on Gallipoli, you see, we were all tough, very, very tough. We could stick it without food or anything like that.
You meant now the Australians arrived. What did you think of the Australians when they came?
Well, I thought the Australians were the biggest set of men I've ever seen in my life. I don't think I had ever saw one that was under 6 foot. Oh, they were all big fellas, big stout. Of course, it's all right seeing them, but one little bullet will put them down. And big fellas, they're a big target. And when I saw them, I thought they were the biggest, finest lot of men I've ever seen. But they were very unruly.
What? How did that show itself? How did that show itself? You say they were unruly. In what way?
They were unruly. They didn't do what their officers told them to do. I believe they were all right when they were in war, but when they were in peace, they wouldn't obey their officers. They wouldn't do anything. In fact, I believe that some of the officers fell out with the men, you know. And so there was really no discipline in the Australian army.
What did you think of that? Were you envious? Would you rather have had less discipline, or did you think it was important to have the discipline? Would you rather have had less discipline, or did you think your discipline was important?
Oh, our discipline was very, very important, I thought. I thought discipline is important.
So you think the Australians would have been better with some more discipline?
Oh, I don't know. In a melee like that, when you've got to get on the land, or even when you're fighting, you've got to depend upon your own ability. Not disability, it's every man for himself then. If you're going against someone, you know, you've got to depend on yourself. You've got to own your own judgment then.
Was there any trouble about... With the were you aware that they got a lot more pay than you got?
Well, of course, we only got a shilling a day, or sixpence a day. They got 6 shillings a day. So, and of course all the prices went up for us then. So we stopped buying. We couldn't buy anything. But you heard of the Wuzzers.
What did you hear? Were you there, or did you hear about that?
The Wuzzers. You've heard about them.
Well, tell me what you were.
Oh, I didn't bother about them. I went up them, you know, saw them and all that, but I wouldn't have anything to do with them. I was dead scared.
What of?
Oh, diseases. I know our officer, one of our officers at least, a young man with a French name. He was taken away. I think he had a dose of something. I don't know what it was. But the Australians were there, and they were told to leave, and they wouldn't go. So they brought the 7th LF out, the 7th, and they charged them with the bayonet and told them to get out. They got them out. That was in Cairo.
Was there any trouble between the Australians and the Lancashire troops?
No trouble.
Did you get on well?
Oh, they were very, very, very friendly. In fact, I think there was more Australians slept in our barracks than there was us that first night. First time they came over. When the Australians came over, our barracks was absolutely full of Australians, sleeping anywhere, on the floor, spread out. In the morning when we got up, it was everywhere, Australians. Oh, and we laughed at them, helped them up, and they get on with it. Yeah.
How about the New Zealanders? How about the New Zealanders? What did you think
they were
of them?
They were more disciplined, much more disciplined than the Australians. They were just as good a fighters, you know, and all that, but they were much more disciplined.
And, what about the Egyptians, the local civilians? How did you get on with them? What did you think?
Well, I got on with them all right, but they didn't like us, you know.
What makes you say that?
As a matter of fact, I think it was almost on the revolution, the foreign troops being in their land, you know. So they got the old division, 42nd Division. That's quite a number of men, you know, a few thousand. And we were all issued with ammunition, 20 rounds apiece per man. And we marched through Cairo, a route march, with fixed bayonets, just to show them they were still there. And that seemed to put things all right. No, I had no trouble with them at all.
How did you say that they didn't like you, or not you, but they didn't like the British being there? How did that show itself?
Well, I don't know exactly how to answer that. But because I got on with them all right, but I believe some of the Australians, they got, you know, the married ones used to wear a kind of a bobbin, and a brass bobbin on the neck, on the nose, and here, and used to cover the face with a cloth, and they used to pull that off. They did that. They got to watch themselves in the toilet the next day. Because they'd come round them with a knife. So many a time I've watched, we got to know about this, you know, so sometimes we had a guard on round there, watching the toilets at the back, in case any gypos came round.
And what exactly were they trying to do?
And?
What were the Egyptians trying to do?
They tried to nick you with the bayonet, with their knife. If they could. You got to watch them there. But as I said, there's good and bad. There are plenty of good Egyptians who thought there was one who was about 6'6", great big tall, he was like a tree. And I was on guard with him, he had a great big long stiff about 7 foot. And he'd walk about with his stick, and there was one fella came out with a knife. He was going to kill another Egyptian, and one whack with his stick sent him running away. And I ordered him, to go. But there was all sorts of adventures there,
Tell us some of them.
Hmm?
Can you still remember them?
Same as in Cairo. When we went to El Geisha, there was a magazine called El Geisha Magazine. And it was like a camp with all the ammunition underneath the ground. The walls were about 3 foot thick, like in that film. New Guest, something like that. And at night, every night, there was a platform run all round. Next door to this fort wasn't another fort. It was Napoleon Fort. One that Napoleon put there during the war, his war, Napoleon War, with guns there to fire on Cairo. But of course, the guns weren't there then, but an Egyptian doctor took them away. But that was a rum place to be in that. One night, one of our men fired over the top of into the ground. Where it hit the ground, the bullet hit the ground, it sunk. And in the morning, when we looked to go where it sunk, there was a whole family of them, man, woman, 3 or 4 children, all bound up, mummies. And from there, you went down the lane, down this lane to the meat market. The meat market was where you could buy, not you, you wouldn't buy it, but for a quarter maleem, that was a quarter of a piastre. The gypos used to buy meat there, with that, a bit of fat, bits of fat and all that we'd left, they used to get hold of. And to walk down that lane at night was was pretty dangerous. Wow. And I did it.
What do you remember of it?
I did it one night. But I'd only got out of it when all of a sudden I felt my hand touched like that. And I had a big stick with me, and the officer guarding in charge, he came out with his sword, and he said, "I just don't know whether to let you go or not, it's too dangerous." I said, "I'll be all right." The reason I wanted to go was they'd given me a new job. Instead of being on guard, I was a pioneer, maybe to be a pioneer for that camp. And I was afraid of wild cats or a wild animal coming into the tent over the wall, So I said, "I'm going to get a candle." So I went down to this village trying to get a candle. I had a loaded stick in one hand and the bayonet was on. And my hand was touched. I knew what it was. It was one of the little girl natives, So I ignored that and went down to the... My hair was standing up on end when I went down. And
You were frightened of being attacked?
Ben?
You were frightened of being attacked?
Oh, yes, definitely. On the right-hand side, there was a long hill. As high as these houses, just went over like a hill. On the left-hand side, it was all sepulchres with a stone there. You could roll the stone away and go inside. And all the Egyptian mummies were there. But you didn't roll the stone away. It's too full of vultures. These big vultures? Well, it was full of them, eating away. That was when I was there, anyway. And I went down there and came back. I was quite all right. When I came back, there was a crowd of them with me. young men with me, all jabbering away in Egyptian, you know, and I couldn't tell what they were saying. But they escorted me up there right to the gate, and I banged at the gate, and the officer came out with his sword and a rifleman, you know, fixed bayonet, and they let me in. Did he get what he wanted? I said, oh, yes. Oh. Anyway, a day or two later, I walked down there, and I saw something shining in this hill. So I got my bayonet out and dug it into the hill there. Oh, and I got a right load of coins, Egyptian coins. Of course, I haven't got them now. That's what the mother has got them, you know, some. I haven't got them. I lost them. So.
What was your job as a pioneer then? This is a company pioneer.
Oh.
What did you have to do?
Really, I would have had to dig a hole for them, for the troops to do the busying, you know. But I had no need to do anything like that, because every day it was empty, and I wondered where it was all going to. And the Egyptians were coming in, the Egyptian women from a village just nearby. We're coming in, getting it all in the shuffle, put it in their basket, running away with it. They were using it for peat. They could burn it and cook the meal on it, but it would dry it out. And that's what they told me it did. But anyway, I was satisfied so long as they took it. But if they had stopped there, I had to get a cane and smack the bottoms, you know, they get them away from it.
What? What other jobs did you have as pioneer?
No other job. No other job.
Well, now, I didn't ask before. What would you do on guard duty? Did you have to get specially ready? Did you have a stick man and all that sort of thing?
On guard? Oh, he was on guard with rifle and bayonet.
And did you have to get ready specially for it? Were you expected to be especially smart when you were on guard? Were you expected to be very smart when you were on guard? Did you have a stick man and things like that?
Oh, we were there to prevent anybody coming over the wall. Of course, the wall was as high as there, and we were on a platform that went round, you see. And when they came and started the tricks, we had ball ammunition. We had 20 rounds of ammunition on us. We could shoot at them if they came round.
Did you?
No. No, there was one fella that shouted when I was on guard before I got this pioneer job. He said, "Look behind you, look behind you, behind you." He's going up at the, "Look behind you." "What is it? What's up?" "A nigger behind you with a knife." So I looked round quick, nobody there. And he jumped down and rushed with his bayonet, putting it in the bushes, but there was nobody there. Whether they'd seen something or not, I don't know, but that was just one little incident. There was another incident when we relieved the Worcesters, and they were in Cairo, in El Gish, the same place. There was another another ammunition dump inside a big building. And round this building was all railings. And on one part of the building, there was a sentry box that would hold two. And before any of our lads got there, the Worcesters had been there, as I said, and they'd gone to sleep. And the Egyptians had got over the railings and cut the throats. And when the guard came down to change them, the throats were found them there dead.